All right. Okay, so we'll get started. So welcome to MMS. I think this might be the first breakout session. It's the second one that we've done, but I hope you enjoyed the keynote. I hope it was fun, and I hope you're going to have a good week. So my name is Adam Hall. I sit inside the Windows Server and Management Marketing team back in Redmond. I sit basically between engineering, where the devs sit, and the rest of the world, and have the great pleasure to be able to take these products to market and have fun. With me on stage is Raymond
Not
Chow.
on you.
Yeah, I'm not on you. Yeah, thank you. Raymond Chow is on stage with me, and he's going to be doing the demo. I'll let Raymond introduce himself.
Thanks, Adam. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Raymond. I actually work for Infront Consulting Group. I'm the managing principal consultant for Infront Consulting Group, Asia Pacific. I'm actually based in Malaysia, so I'm actually glad to be in Vegas and on the ground after just only a 26-hour flight. So yeah, so forgive me if I just suddenly fall asleep in the middle of our session.
Now, I want to thank Raymond as well, because on these days where we have keynotes, we're typically backstage about 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning to get things ready. But it actually is 5 o'clock where Raymond comes from. So as you'll see on his screen, it is 5 a.m. in Malaysia. So we'll forgive him if he has any lapses on the way through. So just a couple of points. We're going to go through a few of these investment areas and talk about the technology and show you what you get when you do the upgrade. I want to make the point that there's a lot of information in these slides, and we're going to make them all available so you can download them. They're built so that you can take these slides home and read through them. Okay? So I am going to go through at quite a good pace. We've got a lot of content to cover. We want to show lots of demo. And also, I'll get you to hold your questions just due to the volume of content, but we will stop 10 minutes early and make sure that we've got lots of time for Q&A. Okay? So I will hold those questions till the end. So as far as the investment areas go, Windows Server 2012 was a big launch for us back in September last year, and there was a lot of investment made in the Active Directory space, both in the terms of the way Active Directory works under the hood, but also in the way that Active Directory is deployed and what you can do with it once you do deploy. And so we had these four kind of key areas: the simplifying and enhancing the deployment process, and Raymond's going to take you through a demo which shows what that looks like. The robustness on virtualization platforms. We get that everything's either virtualized or going to be virtualized pretty shortly. And as you'll see on the content on the way through in previous versions, that was kind of a nightmare. Enhancing the management capabilities, making it a lot easier to know what's going on with Active Directory. And then the business-driven security requirements. This is like the dynamic access control that we showed in the last demo in the keynote. And Active Directory is the underpinning of that entire setup and configuration. So our broad goals with Active Directory when we released Windows Server 2012 were virtualization that just works. This was an incredibly large piece of investment that we made. The deployment was critical. Previously, it was kind of hard to get AD deployed. If it failed halfway through, then you'd have to start again. The install from media was there or thereabouts. And it was kind of hard, to be honest. And so we recognized that. We took a lot of feedback about 2008 and R2. And then when we were working on 2012, we built that in to make sure it was really easy. And then the management, being able to use PowerShell for everything, being able to see the PowerShell viewer, things like the recycle bin and so on, being available in the interface so you can actually use it rather than trying to work out some weird PowerShell commandlet to be able to get things back. So this is I'm not going to go through everything on this slide, but basically the new features and enhancements fall into either of these buckets. You've either got simplified deployment or anything in the deployment range, I should say, whether it's the deployment, the virtualization, the rapid deployment, or the platform changes that we made. Or on the management side, there's a lot more investment around, especially things like the Kerberos enhancements, which allow us to do dynamic access control. DAC is based on an enhancement that we made to the Kerberos packets that we send down and the Kerberos tickets that we leverage to get access to that information. It's one of the reasons why DAC only works with 2012 server and Windows 8, is because only those platforms are able to understand the Kerberos ticket that we throw at them in order to do DAC. And so we'll go through some of those details as we go through. My clicker will work. Okay. So, simplified deployment. Background. It was kind of hard in the past, right? Hands up who's done either an Active Directory deployment or an NT4 to Active Directory migration. Fair amount of you in the room. Anybody like love it and want to do it again? Just looking? No, nobody. Right. So it was time consuming. It was error prone. It took a lot of preparation. It was incredibly complex to actually do this in terms of the order that you did it and being able to do it remotely. Things like having to remote into the PDC emulators in order to do the upgrade, getting the media locally. All these things were really hard to do. The preparation tools, I don't know how many times I got frustrated with forest preps and domain preps and all those kinds of things. A whole plethora of executables required just to get to the point where you can do the Active Directory deployment. It was pretty horrendous, to be honest. And then the replication, waiting for convergence before we actually did things in between each step, which was it. So, the solution. We integrated all the preparation steps into the promotion process itself. So all those things that you used to have to do separate before you even started were now checked as we did part of the service. The migration, I should say. All the prerequisites, we automated doing all the prereqs to make sure you could actually do it. The environment prerequisites were installed. Integration with the server manager to make it all the Active Directory tools are available in the server manager console. We consolidated all those tools together as part of Server 2012, and then we built in the PowerShell UI. Everything is driven through PowerShell. Everything you do in the interface, you can get the script at the end of it and those kinds of things, making it really easy for you to automate, bring in things like Orchestrator, make it repeatable. As far as the features go, the pre-validation we went through, the remote execution was a big one. Being able to remotely DC promo up Active Directory servers as opposed to having to RDP into them or physically connect to them in order to be able to run it. That was a huge step, and it was a major change. The PowerShell script export has been picked up by everybody and been able to use that. And then the configuration pages made a whole lot simpler, we hope, for you guys to be able to use them. So I think with that, we're going to jump into our first demo, and Raymond's going to take you through the deployment steps.
Sure. Thanks, Adam. Okay, so we've all seen what the process is of migrating to Active Directory, right? I started working on Active Directory since Windows NT4, and I've had experiences migrating from NT4 to Windows 2000 to 2003 and 2008, and I remember the process being very, very painful. So I wanted to give you just a quick demo on how we do migration, how the deployment wizards that Adam talked about in a upgrade from a 2008 Active Directory environment up to 2012. So if you look on the screen here, I have a AD 2008 server running. And as you can see, it's running 2008 R2 Enterprise on this server. And if I go to the Active Directory users and computers, I can see that in my domain, I have the AD 2008 machine as my domain controller. And I have another machine here called AD01, which I've joined into the domain as a member server. Okay? So let me go to AD01 now. So AD01 is a Windows Server 2012 machine, right? So in the past, when we wanted to migrate Active Directory to a newer version, right, you know that we needed to do things like DC promo forest prep or DC promo domain prep, right? So we had to make sure that all these prerequisites and all these processes had to be run before we can even attempt to do an upgrade to the new Active Directory. So what is the feel like now? So let me just go to the server here. And now you can see in the new server manager dashboard, everything is kind of nice and built into the server management dashboard. So let's go ahead and add the roles and features on this server. So I'm going to start this wizard off. So I'm going to go ahead and install a role. Now, this is what Adam was talking about. So in this screen, you can actually now choose a remote machine and do a DC promo and upgrade that machine, that member server, to a domain controller. So you don't actually have to be on that machine and be at that site to do this. Right? So if your machine is listed here, you can actually choose that machine and perform that the DC promo up remotely. So I'm going to do it on this machine here. And I'm going to go ahead and select Active Directory Domain Services. And it's also going to go ahead and install some of the necessary tools for me, like PowerShell and some of the Administrative Center tools. And I'm also going to install DNS server on this server here. All right. Okay, I don't need any additional features for this setup to go. It's going to just give me a quick explanation about what I'm doing on Active Directory Domain Services, making sure that I'm not getting anything wrong, and also on DNS server. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and look at the confirmation screen. So on the top here, I can actually say, okay, when you're done, please go ahead and restart the server for me. Right? Now, what's interesting is down here. So if I look at the bottom here, there's a link which actually helps me to export whatever configurations that I had selected earlier up to an XML file. So if I actually run, and it should actually, if I mouse over that, it actually tells me the PowerShell script that I can run together with that XML file to actually install a new domain controller with some of those settings that I've already pre-selected. Right? So it makes things a lot more easier. So we'll go ahead and install, and it's going to start the installation. Okay? So in the new server manager console here, we can actually let this process actually go ahead, and I'm just going to close it, and I can just go ahead and do some other stuff, like take a look at the server, install something else that I wanted to, browse around and look at some of the events and so on, and it will not actually interfere with whatever tasks that I'm running in the background. So if I go up to the notifications up here, you can actually see that it is actually doing it in the background. If I go to task details, you can actually see that it has already completed. So that was pretty fast. And if I go to add roles and features, it's going to tell me that there are additional steps that are required. So there's a lot of the knowledge about doing this process which is built into the wizard. And this is really helpful. So you can actually get someone which is not very familiar to actually do this for you if you want to. So I'm going to go ahead and say, okay, so it says that I have one more step which I have not done yet, which is to promote this server to a domain controller. So I'm going to go ahead and click that link over there. It's going to open up another wizard for me, and it's going to go through the deployment steps for me. So here I can select what role my AD domain controller is. Is it a new forest? In this case, I'm going to choose it to be an additional domain controller in this domain. And it's going to ask me what specific capabilities that I want to install in this domain controller. So if I wanted to build an RODC at this point, I can actually choose choose the selection as an RODC over here. Okay. So I'm going to go ahead and put in a password for the directory services restore. It's really dark up here. Okay. Now, this is just telling me that I did not do any DNS delegation of the zone, so I'm just going to go ahead. And at this point, now you can see that install from media is built into the wizard. So if you had previously used the NTDS util to build an offline media, and you can actually now select that media from here. Okay. So in case some of you are new to IFM, install from media is really a useful option. If you wanted to build, let's say, for example, a branch Active Directory domain controller, and you didn't really want it to sync the whole entire Active Directory after it's being built. So you can actually pre-build the offline media, have all the current content in the directory built inside the media, bring the media across, and install that domain controller with the directory information already in there. Okay, so this is pretty useful. So I'm going to go ahead and say it's replicate from any domain controller. Okay. So this is asking me where do I want to keep all my AD databases. Go ahead. Now, so this screen, you can see that at this point, it is going to help us to do the DC promo forest prep, the DC promo domain prep options. Right? So we don't have to do that as a prerequisite. So it's all built in into the wizard. So it's going to give me an option to review. And if I click on View Script here, so like what Adam mentioned as well earlier, so a lot of the features in 2012 is all built on PowerShell. Right? So you can actually take this PowerShell script and go ahead and start building domain controllers on the fly. Right? Sorry, can you repeat that? Sorry?
The recovery password.
A password? Yeah, so you there is a way. So sorry, the question here is, can we enter passwords here? So there is a couple of ways you can do that. You can do it as an interactive, right? So you can actually ask for an input, right? Or you can ask it to read from a file, or there's a couple of ways. Okay. And it's gonna do a quick prerequisites check Now, what it's doing here is it's going to check things like the DNS. It's going to check whether there's available global catalogs in the current domain. It's going to check for some of the prerequisites, that was there any delegation of the zone being done, and so on. So it's going to give me results like whether there was any encrypted algorithms and so on. And at this point, I've passed all my prerequisites, and I'm going to go ahead and install it. And it's going to go. Okay. So if you notice up there in the wizard now, at this point, it's going to start with the forest prep first. Right? And after the forest prep, it's going to go ahead and do the domain prep. And after that, do the normal migration process that we've done. Okay? So this is going to take a while. So what I've done is, I know we all love watching loading bars. But instead of that, I'm going to just show you. Oh, it's actually already at the domain. So I'm just going to leave it to run.
Can you just repeat that?
Yeah, correct. So the question is, am I doing this with enterprise admin rights? The answer is yes.
Yeah, all the same credential requirements apply. Yeah.
All right. So it's going to go ahead and configure the DNS, install the Active Directory, and so on. Okay?
Are you going to switch over, or are you going to swipe up? Done?
Yeah, it's done. So it's done, and I remember that I selected to do the automatic restart. So it's just going to sign off for me, and it's going to do the restart in 30 seconds. Okay? So I'm just going to quickly switch over instead of waiting for this. Okay. So I actually pre-recorded the process after this. So when you actually sign off, right? So it's done. It's going to say that it's successfully installed as a domain controller. It's going to restart, and at this point, it's going to build itself into AD. I'm just going to fast forward a little bit just to show you. Right. So when it boots up, and I'm just going to quickly show you once it's boot up. Right, just going to go to the users and computers up in 8001 that we've just upgraded. And in a little while, you can see that in the domain controllers container, you see both domain controllers in there. So it's pretty painless, right, the whole process. Right?
And just the Raymond server is now back up, and it's going through its first boot back in the end. So it's not particularly exciting to watch, as you guys will be aware.
Yep.
So we've just skipped over that. But so simplified deployment extras, a few extra things. So since Windows 2000, DC Promo has basically been completely intolerant of any network issue. If you're running a DC Promo and your network dropped for a very, very short amount of time, sub-second, it would start all over again. And so in Server 2012, it effectively employs an infinite retry, which basically means it's going to keep trying to do this until you tell it to stop. Okay? Install from media got a whole lot easier. The IFM is a whole lot easier to actually run. You can see that we don't now require you to run a full offline defrag, because has anyone actually ever done a full offline defrag of AD? Anyone? Is there any hand? I've got one. I'm surprised I even... Two. I'm surprised I even got two. The answer is normally zero. And also, ADFS is now in the box.
Brave
and
man.
When you look... very brave man. So ADFS is when you... If you watched the keynote and you saw Demo 5, which was the company portal and Brad authenticating back to get his apps, ADFS is part of that solution. So it's now part of Windows Server in the box. All right, virtualization. Virtualizing domain controllers. Prior to 2012, again, this was possible but not really supported. There were issues. The big problem with virtualizing domain controllers is that unsuspecting admins would think they were doing the right thing by taking snapshots, and what happened is I'd roll the snapshot back, which completely pants Active Directory. It was all out of sync. Everything was a mess. If you deleted accounts, they came back. It was just horrible. And so basically with Server 2012, when a DC comes back online for the first time, it checks for an identifier. And if it finds that its identifier is lower than the other identifier that it gets, it throws away everything that it knows about and does an update. and pulls down everything that's there. Okay, it's a very simple way of doing it, but it's incredibly effective. Now, this is actually talking through Hyper-V to get this generation ID. And we support this in Windows Server 2012, Hyper-V, and VMware, I believe, are building this in, or if they haven't already, into VCF 5, something or other. I think I've got the number later on. It does require that your Server 2012 DCs are hosted on either Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V or one of the latest versions of VMware ESX in order to be able to do this. We just talked about all of this, all the cloning, the problems that are involved with that. This is a slide that I included for you to take away with. And I'm going to cut back to Raymond again to show you some more demo.
Oh, it's me again.
Absolutely. This is all about you, Matty.
Okay. So Adam talked about virtualizing domain controllers, right? So he also explained about the new VM generation ID that works together with Hyper-V. And this is really important, right? So when we start doing things like snapshotting, and throughout the whole session today, you will see that I am building a lot of snapshots around Active Directory, and it's not going to corrupt the Active Directory at all. Now, what I want to do in this demo is I wanted to show you a feature called cloning of domain controllers, right? So we know now that we can safely virtualize domain controllers. So what about now, can we clone domain controllers since domain controllers are in a virtual environment now? So the answer is yes. So in my AD01, which is a virtual domain controller, I'm going to build a new domain controller. And I want to clone AD01 to build this new domain controller. How do I do that? So in my users container here, I have a default group or a built-in group here called clonable domain controllers. So all I have to do is actually open up that group and add as a member the AD01 computer. So I'm going to say AD01 here, check the name just to make sure I got it right. So I've just added AD01 as a member of the clonable domain controllers group. So this is basically the only prerequisite that I need to start building a clone domain controller, right? So just make sure that that is in that group, okay? Now I'm going to launch PowerShell now, right? We all love PowerShell better than UI, right? Just going to increase the font a little bit so you guys can see it better. Okay, now I have all this ready here to save some time. I'll be happy to share all this with you guys if you want it. So to build the new clone domain controller is pretty easy. So let me just share what I'm doing here in this PowerShell script. So the command is basically new AD clone config file. So I'm just going to build that config file. And here I'm actually defining the IP address of the new cloned domain controller, the subnet mask, and also the DNS, right? I'm going to say that this is a static IP address. Right? So I'm building the whole environment with the IP address and making a copy of the current AD domain controller. Now, it's going to actually give me a warning error here that says that, look, what this error means is that there may be some services in my AD that cannot be cloned. So it's really important if you do this process to make sure that all the services you have running in the DC is able to be cloned, right? So let's actually take a look at what actually is not working or cannot be cloned, right? So I'm going to just run the get my excluded application list, and it's going to tell me the DHCP server, right? So the DHCP server is not a clonable service, right? You know, in 2012, the DHCP server is a new service which you can run it now as a new cluster service. Right? So you can actually go ahead and build that instead. So I'm just going to go ahead now and say, okay, that's fine. Can we please add the DHCP server into the exclusion list? And it's easy. I just have to run the same command with the generate XML command. Okay, so that's done. Now let's go ahead and run the command again to build the clone domain controller. Okay, so it's just going to go ahead and do the checks again. And this time, it says the clone configuration file has been created. Now, that's it. So what do I do now? So the only thing I have to do now is to basically do a shutdown. So I'm just going to shut down my machine here now. Okay. So I'm just going to shut down my AD domain controller. Right. Now, and when it's done, in a little while, so the next step is just now I just have to export this virtual machine. Okay. So once I have that virtual machine exported, I just have to bring that exported files, the virtual machine files, the VHD files, bring it over to wherever I want to build the new domain controller, and go ahead and then just import that virtual machine back in. Right? So as simple as that. So once you import the virtual machine back in, and because for the sake of time, I'm just going to just shift to a new snapshot there. Instead of waiting for it to import. Okay. Now, what will happen is this. So once the domain controller boots up, right? So in that process of cloning, it's going to do like a mini sysprep, right? So it's going to flush out its GUID of the DC, and it's going to give it some new identities, right? And it's going to give it a new name. Now, if you want to specify your own name for the host, you actually just have to add the clone name, right, in that command that I typed in earlier, right? What if you don't? Like in my example, I did not specify a name. So what is the default name that it gives? That's the default name that it'll give, right? So it will take the original domain, the original host name, and add a clone number starting from 0001. And this is basically how we do cloning of domain controllers.
Awesome. All right. Let's carry on. As far as what's going on, I've included in the slides the flow of what's actually going on in the demo that Raymond just described. So as your clone comes up, this is actually what goes on. It's just there, some extra information for you to take a look at afterwards. So simplified management, so PowerShell. You've already seen Raymond crack out the PowerShell command line. We use this a lot. A lot of when you run server manager tasks remotely, they're actually PowerShell being run under the hood. Everything that we do in Windows Server 2012 is driven through, by, and with PowerShell. And so making that super easy to use, getting the command line history, showing you what's going on, making it really easy to use that was kind of critical for us making this a whole lot easier for you guys to use in terms of ongoing management, as well as from the deployment point of view. We brought things like the topology management into PowerShell and being able to manage the replication. All of the site topology configuration can be done through PowerShell. So there's basically nothing you can't do in Active Directory with PowerShell that you can do in the interface. In fact, there's probably some things that are the other way around. Now, as far as being able to do this, we've got the Active Directory web service, which allows you to go to a website and be able to trigger PowerShell commandlets and so on, which is great for that 2 o'clock in the morning call where you just need to log in, run some commands, let it go, pick it up later. The Active Directory gateway can be used instead. And the remote server admin tools, you can install those on your local client or on your jump box if you're doing that to get into your environment. So we're going to go back to demo. I told you it'll be fairly heavy demo. It's better for you guys to see this. You can get these slides and have a look them through on your own later on, as well as contact. We'll publish everything that Raymond's doing. We'll put a blog out with the video that he recorded, as well as all the scripts that we've run and the details. So back to you, Raymond.
Thank you. I'm just going to quickly change the resolution so everyone can see this better.
I beg your pardon? Not every DC, you need to deploy at least one to be able to jump in. So if you need to get to a specific DC and it's in a location that's hard to get to, you may want to do that. But you really only need one entry point in, and then once you get to that, you can get to all the other DCs as well through the remote tools. All right, over to Raymond.
Thank you. Okay. So PowerShell for Active Directory was already available back in 2008 R2, right? So there are a couple of new stuff that's been built into and the new commands into the Active Directory module. And I wanted to show you one example of it today. Now, in case everyone did not know this, so the new Active Directory Administration Center here, and I'm going to go ahead and just create a new OU here. I'm going to just say OU called MMS01. All right, so that's the new OU. And I'm going to go ahead and create a new group here called MMS Group 01. Okay, so the good thing about the new Active Directory Administrative Center is at the bottom, there's a Windows PowerShell history log. Right, so whatever you do in Active Directory, you can actually see the PowerShell script down here. So this is a really good learning process for people that is just starting with Active Directory PowerShell. So you can actually see that we ran the new ADOU command with those parameters and those values there. And you can actually see that, and you can actually take this, copy it, and run it on any PowerShell window.
So from an automation point of view, this is really critical because you start to look at how you build those runbooks that Michael showed you in the keynote, automating all these standard tasks around creating users, creating groups, making modifications, whatever you want to do. Do it once in the interface. It'll tell you exactly what it did in PowerShell to do what you did in the nice graphical interface. You can take that, generalize it, and be able to just run it over and over again.
Okay. Now, so I want to just show you some of the quick commands that is available in the new Active Directory, right? So most of the new stuff that is in 2012 is around replication. So you have some of the new AD replication stuff, AD replication commands that you can run in PowerShell now. And that is the demo I wanted to do for you today. So the scenario that I wanted to show you is a scenario where there is a replication error, right? So maybe when we created a user, and when the user actually logs in a site, he could not log on, right? And it might have been due to a replication error. So how do we use PowerShell to troubleshoot that? Okay. So I'm just going to go ahead and create a new AD user called MMS Hero. All right. Is it me or you, Adam? Enable it as true. All right. So I'm going to make sure that it's enabled. And I'm going to say the account password. I'm gonna add something that will ask me for a user prompt. So I'm gonna say read host. Give me a prompt of enter password and make sure that it is in a hidden format. All right. So it's gonna ask me to enter the new password. So I'm gonna just key in a password here, and you notice that. It's in hidden text, and that's done. Okay? So if I list down details of, MMS Hero here, you can see that the user is created with some of those properties there. Okay? So I'm going to make my life a little bit easier. I'm going to add the results of this into a variable called MMS Hero. Right? Get AD user, MMS hero. Okay, I'm just going to do a quick check that that is correct. There we go. That is the results of my variable. Okay. Now the next thing I want to do is I want to see what are the domain controllers in my domain. Right. So I'm just going to do a get AD domain controllers. Right. And I'm going to do a filter. So I don't just want to see this domain controller. I want to see all domain controllers. So I'm going to just do a star on the filter there. Okay? So that kind of lists down all my domain controls and all the properties there. I'm not really interested in everything there. I'm only interested in the name. So I'm just going to do a pipe, and I'm just going to say, just select the name for me. So in my environment, you can see I have three domain controllers, my original AD01, and the two clone domain controllers that I've cloned earlier. Okay? Now, I'm going to make my life a little bit easier again by adding this into a new variable called all DCs there. Okay? And I'm just going to just do a quick check again to make sure that my results are correct. Okay? So now I have two variables that I can work with. So what I want to do is this. So I want to change the password on the domain control. And when I change the password, it should basically replicate across, right? And I'm going to create an issue here for you guys to see, right? So the next thing I want to do is I want to list down that property called Unicode password. So I'm just going to go all DCs with the pipe. And I'm going to add my criteria here, which is get AD replication metadata. So this is one of the new commands that's available in 2012. How many of you guys used to use repadmin? Show of hands. Right? So
hey,
if you've used repadmin was the D tool, right? So repadmin had a command called the show object metadata, right? So this is pretty much similar in PowerShell. So I'm gonna just do that. And I'm gonna select the object which is my MMS hero. Okay. And the attribute that I want to pick up is the Unicode password. Right? Now I want to show Unicode password on all the servers that has been listed in there. So I'm just going to say which server. I want it to say all the servers in the name column. Okay? I'm just going to do that. So it's going to list down for me. I have three domain controllers. So it's going to list out all three Unicode password attributes on all three domain controllers. Now, what I'm really interested in, just to want to show you in the demo, is this property here, which is the last originating change time. So I'm just going to add that pipe in there, and I'm just going to select last originating. Hope I can spell right.
It's now 5:40 in the morning.
I know. I should be fast asleep. And I'm going to also add, I want to see the server that is doing this on. So I can see now that the last change is at 5:34 a.m. Well, you are probably sleeping.
Not
So when we created the user MMS hero, it got replicated onto all three domain controllers. So that's good. So let's go ahead and turn off the replication on CL0002. Okay. So I'm going to use the repadmin command, which works in PowerShell as well. I'm going to use this to disable the inbound replication. So now inbound replication is disabled on CL0002. Let's go back to 8001 now. Okay. So on 8001, let me just clear the screen here so everyone's back on the top. So let's set a new password for MMS Hero. Okay. So I'm going to use the set AD account. And password is what I want, okay? For the user MMS hero, okay? And I'm going to say new password. And again, I'm going to ask it to ask me for an input with a prompt of new password. And again, I want to make sure that I hide that whatever password I type in. Okay, so new password, I'm going to just give it a new password now.
Wait a minute.
Oops, sorry. I'm just going to run that again. Okay, there you go. So I've given it a new password. Now, so at this point, when a new password has been set, it should replicate across all domain controllers. Now, let's see that replication results here now. So I'm going to run that again. And okay, good. 5:40 a.m. now. It's replicated to both controls 8001 and CL001, but because we have inbound replication turned off, it has not replicated to CL002. So at this point, this is a really useful command to actually look at whether my objects has been replicated or not. Right? So how do I fix this? So one of the new commands that you can run now is the sync command. So you can actually do a sync AD object, and the object I want to sync is MMS hero, and I need to specify a source from which domain controller, and I'm going to say 8001, and a destination, which is 8001CL0002. I hope I got that name right. And I'm going to go ahead. So it's going to sync the object again to CL002. Let's check our results and run the list again. Okay, there we go. So now you can see that all domain controllers have been replicated, and we are safe. Adam.
Awesome. All right, so some pretty heavy-duty PowerShell there.
Yep.
All right, so a few extra things that we've got going on around additional things we can do with AD. So new in Windows Server 2012 AD is Active Directory-based activation. I'm guessing that most of you in the audience have deployed KMS or some other way of activating your Windows clients and your Office installations. So with AD 2012, you can now do this based on domain membership. And simply by joining a domain, simply by joining a client to our Active Directory, we can activate both the Windows client and the Office installation that's on it as well. Now, you like that? Excellent.
Cool.
You've used KMS, haven't you? Excellent. So this requires Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012. It's another better together story. The KMS and the Active Directory-based activation can coexist. Okay, so if you've got down-level clients and you want to activate the new ones using the new Server 2012, and you want to keep KMS, we can do that. You do require that for down-level licensing. And, of course, there is a Active Directory schema change that is required, which is actually where the data for the activation is actually stored in the activation object. Managed service accounts. Anybody using managed service accounts? Global managed service accounts. Let me be more specific. There's a few of you out there. So they were introduced with Server 2008 R2. And for any of you that use them with Server 2008 R2, you would have found a few challenges around clustering. And in fact, a lot of the scenarios that you'd look at a managed service account and go, yeah, that's an account that we want to do that for, it didn't work, which kind of defeated the purpose. It was a great idea, but it had so many limitations that it was problematic. So there's a lot of small text in the middle about the solution, but basically what that says is there's a new security principle type called a global managed service account. And what this allows you to do is to centrally manage the identity of those managed services accounts in Active Directory. Things like password changes, things like other things that you want to do with those accounts are all managed centrally, so you don't have to go log on to all those machines and change everything. The services do require Windows 8 and Windows Server 2012. Again, there's a lot of under-the-hood enhancements that we did around Kerberos and in the way we actually did that required these new clients. It's not about forcing you guys to upgrade. In fact, this is one of the things we don't want to force you into at a great rate. But there are things that we can build into the new platforms that simply are too hard to backport. And rather than try and invest engineering time looking backwards, we're trying to look forward. So that's the reason why some of these things require the new clients. Offline domain join. Anybody done this? It's in the hands-on lab that is available. It's part of the enabling remote users. And this is really cool. This enables you for someone to rebuild their machine or just be sitting anywhere on the internet with a non-domain join Windows 8 PC. And you can send them a file, or you can put it on a website so they can download it, run a command, and it will remotely join that machine to the domain and then be able to talk over direct access to get all the policy, applications, and so on. It is so cool. It's a great demo, you can do it in a hands-on lab as well, so you can see how it's done. Effectively, you run a command. It creates a piece of blob storage in a text file. For any of you who go to do this, please don't ever open that file with Notepad. You will render it unusable, and you'll have to do it again. I learned that the hard way and then had to find out from engineering what happened, and it's to do with the encoding of the file. So as soon as you open the file, it's dead. We also have the Recycle Bin UI. So anybody enable the Recycle Bin in 2008 R2 and then use the graphical interface that came with it or not, as the case may be? Kind of a great feature that you want to be able to go, oh, crap, I didn't mean to delete that and get it back, but it was almost impossible to get it back unless you knew a command about that long. And so we've brought in the Recycle Bin as part of the interface. So it's just like a Recycle Bin anywhere else you want to use. And then fine-grained password policies, being able to get very specific about what kind and the complexity of the passwords dependent on different groups of users and different clients as well, and being able to assign those password policies to different people, which is great. clicker is very slow. I don't know where these animations came from. All right, so speaking of offline domain join, you think we should do one? Let's do it.
Should we?
Yep. All right. Which PC do you want?
This one.
This one first?
Yeah, all right. Let's do a live one first.
All right, we're going to do it live.
Okay, so offline domain join. It's really simple, right? So from the AD machine that I have now, I'm open up a command prompt in administrator with admin rights. And the command is pretty simple. Now, there's two ways that you can go about doing this, right? So if you want the user to be able to do the domain join themselves, so what you do before this is just basically delegate some rights. So delegate rights to the user to be able to add workstations to the domain, right? So that can be done via group policy, okay? So now, or if you don't want to do that and just leave it as the administrator to do that, then that's fine. So this is the way that we prep Active Directory to understand. So I'm going to run the djoin, okay, and I'm going to say djoin provision and the domain of Contoso, which is my domain, and the machine that I want to get joined offline is CL03. So that's the host name. Right. I'm going to say take that and save the file for domain join into a file called djoin.txt. I'm actually just going to put this in C. Oops. I actually accidentally hit enter. Okay, so the text is called C.
In that folder.
Yeah. So basically what it's going to do is it will create a 64 Unicode text file, and it's going to put all the information in there, right? So what you're going to do is, so I meant to actually call it djoin.txt, so just take that file and just basically give it to the user or give it to the administrator at the branch who is supposed to perform that, okay? So let me go over to the client machine now.
It doesn't matter how you get them the text file. You can email them. You can put it on a web server. I think the lab uses a web server to post the file that you download from the web server. So long as you can get that file onto the local remote machine.
Yeah. So
it can only be used once.
Yeah.
Basically, that. Well, what you're doing is creating an object in Active Directory. Yeah, the machine thinks it's offline. Yeah. No, you can't. It's a one-time use file. One-time use file.
So, okay. So the question is, can I reuse that file? So, if you notice in the command, I actually stated that the machine that it needs to domain offline domain join is CL03. So, it only can be used. It actually can be used multiple times. And in this demo, actually, I have it in there sitting. But every time I use it, it's going to be linking it to the CL03 AD account. Right.
That's
so technical. Essentially, it can only be used once because it needs to be only a one-to-one tie-in.
It's a fair point, though. You can run the command multiple times, but if the machine name's not right, it's only going to create one object, and you end up with multiple machines thinking they're all joined to the domain. Only one of them's going to work.
Right.
The last one.
Okay. So I have the djoin text file over here. I'm just going to go ahead and, before that, I just wanted to quickly show you that in this machine, I do not have any network connection, right? So I have zero network connections here. I have nothing connected, and I'm just going to go ahead, and I'm just also going to show you that this machine is still in a workgroup, okay? So I'm going to go ahead and run a command prompt as admin. Okay. All right. And just to make sure that I remember the commands, it's djoin. I'm going to go ahead and, I'm just going to go ahead and request offline domain join. And I'm going to say load the file which I created earlier, which is in my E drive. It's called djoin.txt, and I'm just going to say load that and configure it in the Windows path of system root.
Okay, did I get that right? System root, okay. And just do it as in my local operating system.
Okay, that's it. Right, so it has just done the offline domain join. Right, so at this point, all I have to do is just reboot. Okay, so once it's restarted, at this process, it's going to start doing the offline domain join. And once it's restarted, you will see in a little while that it's going to be joined to the domain. I'm just going to switch over to the video here because of time.
What number was it?
Yeah.
What number was it?
It's 7.
You can see it all live doing it in the lab. You get to, it's got direct access as well.
Okay. So that is me completing that step there. And I'm just going to do the restart as I did it in the live demo earlier. So it's going to go through. That. I'm just going to fast forward. Make sure that we have some time for questions. And once it restarts, I'll just log in and open up to show you in control panel, in system that the machine now is, in fact, in the domain. It's joined.
Good. Well done. Okay. Home stretch, and then we'll do some questions. As far as the security extra goes, there's a few things that we've done under the hood around Kerberos constrained delegation and also some of the secure tunneling, which is an offline dictionary attack. So there's some detail under the hood here. I'll skip it over in the interest of more. I'm sure you guys have got some questions on the way through. Was anyone not in the keynote this morning? Just to check before we don't cover it. All right. Everyone was there. Demo 6 was about dynamic access control. There's a couple of sessions on this which go into great detail. I'm doing one tomorrow, and there's also a very big, a very deep dive with Matthias, who's from the Windows Server engineering team as well. But effectively, what you can do here is you're leveraging Active Directory 2012. You can tag files based on content scanning, apply an attribute to them, and then perform tasks based on whether that file is tagged or not. So in the keynote this morning, we had a policy that was looking for the word performance in Office documents. And you can this works for any document. You can do it on a text file. You can do it on a PDF. So long as the server can read that document and has a file filter involved, it can scan, look for whatever it is in there. We can do expressions, credit cards, state, SSNs, whatever it is that you want to protect. It can do strings, it can be case sensitive, all that kind of stuff. If it finds that, it will tag the document with a piece of metadata that says, we've tagged this and classified it with whatever the policy is. Once we see that policy, we can then do things to it. We can archive it. So for example, if you've got a phrase that you use that indicates that a file is not the current version to be archived, we can automatically trigger that to be archived. We can block access. We can do the device claims that you saw where Brad couldn't get to it on his RT, but he could get it onto it on an enterprise device. And we can apply rights management, or you can run a custom command as well. And so all of those things are triggered off dynamic access control. This is Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8. Well, you can do it on non-Windows 8, but only devices will work on Windows 8. And you do need a Windows Server 2012 file server and at least one Windows Server 2012 domain controller. Your forest and functional level do not matter, but the fact that you've got a domain controller does, because DAC will only talk to a 2012 domain controller. So if you turn this on and you've only got one domain controller, every single time that anybody opens a file on that file server, it's going to authenticate against that domain controller. So if you turn it on for testing, just be aware of the way that that works and don't flatline the one domain controller that you've got. Now, I think we've got one more quick demo on deck.
Yep.
And then
how much time do we have?
We've got five minutes, good. And then we'll go to questions.
All good. Awesome.
Two. All right.
All righty.
Yep.
So I wanted to show you, just in case if anyone was not in the keynote this morning, I wanted to show you how dynamic access control works. So we know back in 2008 R2, or even before, we always used to do permissions based on user groups. And it was really a nightmare when we had a lot of users, a lot of departments, a lot of roles, and we started cracking our heads on what kind of groups do we have to create, right? And there was, what if someone was in one group and was in another group as well, and we had to give different permissions for both the groups, or both the users. So that was used to be a nightmare. So dynamic access control kind of makes all those things that I just said a lot easier. So I'm going to show you the administrative center again. And you can see now that dynamic access control is built into Active Directory. You can basically add central access policies. So central access policies basically are actions that you run based on certain, for example, classifications or tags that you tag onto folders and files. Right? I want to show you a demo here. Okay, so I have several central access policies here running. I'm going to go to a client machine here, client 01, and I'm logged on here as Farah, right? That's my alter ego. So Farah is basically the a member of the HR department, right? So obviously she can actually access the HR chair, as you can see, right? And let's say Farah tries to what's in the finance, right? And she goes ahead and access the finance, right? So, hey, right, I'm not supposed to be able to access this, right? So with dynamic access control, right, you can actually very quickly put on policies based on, for example, departments. So because Farah is from the HR department, finance folder should only be accessed by the finance department, right? So I'm going to go ahead and go to my file server here. So I have on my file servers those shared folders down there. I'm going to check on the finance shared folder there, right? And I'm going to go to the classification tab. So these are some of the classifications that I've listed down that is available to be classified as. So you can add, you can minus, you can basically choose whatever classifications that you want. So for this particular folder and anything in it, I'm going to say, this can only be accessed by the finance department, right? And I'm going to classify it as Department of Finance, okay? So now, what happens now that the classification of this folder is finance? So I'm going to go to security now, and I'm going to add in a central policy. The central policy that I've already pre-configured is a policy called Department Match. And what is Department Match? Let's take a look. The policy basically just says that if a user's department matches the resource department, means the department that's listed in the folder, the permissions will be whoever that's authenticated has modified permissions. Right? As simple as that. So I'm going to just apply that. That's done. Now I'm going to go back to Farah's machine on CL01. And again, when I access the finance folder, you notice that there's a problem accessing that folder. Right? Now, in the past as well, when you had an access denied message, right, what was the message that came about? Please contact your administrator. So the nice thing here is now you can actually customize that message to whatever you want. Right? So there you go. Now, at this point as well, instead of contacting the administrator, Farah here can actually click on request assistance, and she can actually justify why I need access to the finance folder, right? And when I click on send message, that message will be actually sent to a pre-configured email address. Thank you. Right?
The demo or the feature?
Yeah? Or
both.
Both. Right? So this is really cool. I think this is really cool. Right? So you can actually pre-configure this all on the server. Right? Now, the next thing I wanted to show you is around classifications. Right? So how do we actually flag those classifications, or how do we tag those folders, right? So you can see that one of the ways that if you do it manually, like what I did just now, right? I just manually went in and tagged it. Now, you can actually define as well certain criteria to do automatic tagging. So I'm going to go on the file server now, and I'm going to open the file server resource manager console. So on my file server resource manager console, you notice that I have classification rules. Now, I've created two classification rules here, right? The first one is called the high business impact. That's a typo there. And I'm going to say that for this particular rule, the scope that it affects is my finance folder. And the classification is change the impact classification to high. So assign it the high value of high. Now, when do I do that? So under parameters, if I click on configure, I'm going to see that assign it high when I notice in there, there is a string or a text that says Contoso confidential, right? So that's the minute it sees Contoso confidential, it's going to flag it as high, right? Now, I'm just going to do another one, show you another one here. Now, I have another one here, which is again on the finance folder, and the classification is, I want to change the classification of PII, or personal identifiable information, to high, but this is based on a regular expression, right? Now, this particular regular expression is basically detecting credit card numbers, right? So if it detects that there's a credit card number in the file, it's going to flag PII as high, okay? Now, I'm just going to go to that folder there, finance, and in my finance folder, I have actually two files in there. And in the important info, I actually have a text there that says Contoso confidential. And in the credit card info text, I have a credit card number in there. Right? So just going to quickly check the classifications at this point of time. And as you can see, the only classification I have now there is finance. Right? So for the purpose of this demo, I have this running manually so you can see what actually happens. But you can actually set this to happen in the background and on a scheduled basis. Right? So I'm just going to run it manually now, and we're going to run the classification automation exercise. Okay? So it goes ahead and do that, and it's going to give me a report. So in that report, it's going to say that it affected two files, and the two files that it affected is the important info.txt and the credit card info.txt, the time and also what are the values that it assigned. Now, let's go back into that and have a look at those files. I'm going to go to important info, check on the classification, and notice now it has automatically assigned an impact of high. Right? And for credit card info, it also has automatically assigned the PII of high. Right? So this is automatic classification. So if you had central access policies in place, it will basically take action based on those classifications. All right? Now, one final one that I wanted to show you, which was really interesting to me. Now, I also have another classification rule here called secret classification. Right? I'm just going to open that up to show you. Now, the scope for this is my HR folder. And I actually say, change my confidentiality to high if I see the word secret in the file. Right? So, simple one. Okay. Now, I also have, I'm just going to show you a little bit more detail now. I'm going to go to my AD01, and in my dynamic access control policy, I'm going to show you that I have the secret policy there. I'm going to open that. I'm going to show you what rule and I'm applying. Right? So I'm going to say that if the resource confidentiality is high, then this basically is a condition that I put the permission on it, which says that it can only be accessed by the members of this particular group. And this is a computer group. So what I'm trying to do here is that I want to say that a file can only be accessed by a specific machine. Right? Not any machine, but by a specific machine. Now, while I'm on this page, I just want to quickly touch on this for you. Now, there's also a section here called proposed permissions. Right? Now, this is really, really useful. What is this? This is the what-if scenario. So if you wanted to basically say, what if I did this? What's going to happen? So instead of actually doing it and find out and everything starts breaking and get fired or things like that, you can actually put it in proposed permissions. So when it actually starts working, it will audit it as well and give you the details in your audit logs. So you can actually see the real scenario, but in a what-if scenario. Okay?
This is what you do when you're doing your pilot testing.
Yeah.
Turn it into test mode so you can just see who would have been blocked, not actually block people.
Okay. Now, I'm going to go back to my files over here. I'm going to show you that in the HR folder, right, I have this file here, and it has the word secret. Right. So based on that, it should automatically classify that
as my confidentiality of high. Right? So what does that mean? Okay. Now, remember that Farah was a member of the HR department, right? So again, I just want to show, I'm logged in as Farah. I'm logged in on CL01 here. And obviously, when I access the HR folder, I am part of the HR department. When I open test 05, I'm okay. I'm able to access that, right? So now let's go into another machine called CL02. And I'm going to also log in as Farah. So I'm logging on as the same person. Right? I'm going to go to the share on another machine. And I'm going to access the HR folder. Obviously, I have access since I'm on the HR. But I'm going to access the test 05. And notice it says access denied. Right? So even though I'm in the same department, additional security, I can only access it from the same machine.
Back to you. Thank you. So a couple of points around the Kerberos, the ADFS. A lot of this is in some of the restrictions as to where we can do it. We mentioned earlier around the Kerberos tickets and so on. We made it a whole lot easier in Server 2012 to populate some of the SAML tokens. There's a lot of detail under the hood here that I'll skip over because I want to get onto some questions for you guys. So the one thing I did want to touch on is what happens when you start deploying Windows Server 2012 domain controllers. What do you get turned on and what starts to work at what space? And I know the text is small, this is for you to take away, but basically when you put your first Server 2012 domain member, no, domain controller, you can do all of the Active Directory Administration Center, you can do the PowerShell history and so on. All of that gets turned on just by having a 2012 server. As soon as you bring a DC into the environment, you start to bring in all of the management that you saw, the deployment, the ability to run a lot of that replication commands and so on. And then when you also promote the FSMO PDC role up to 2012, then you can do the DC cloning. All right, so they've slipped an evaluation slide into the end of my deck, which is great. So we've got 10 minutes according to the timer. Have we got 10 minutes? Is that right? I'm going to count that down. So we've got 10 minutes left. We want to make sure that we could have questions if you've got any. There's a lot of content there. It's designed for you to take it away. The demos are to show that AD 2012 is not just about a new version of AD, but it starts to become the central identity for your user. And in the last 10 minutes, for those people leaving, we're going to talk about Azure AD as well. And Azure AD is really the ability to take your identity out to the cloud and the ability to start saying, well, when our users are remote, and you want to authenticate them back on premises, you can either do it in a traditional way through gateways, through VPNs, through direct access, whatever it might be, or you can leverage Windows Azure Active Directory, which will enable you to authenticate out in the cloud and then do a pass back through a single pipe. And so modern applications, if you want to build them out there in the cloud for all the plethora of BYOD devices that are there, having them authenticate against Windows Azure Active Directory is the way to build them. And then use ADFS to come back on premise. Office 365 is, or if you have, if you yourself or you have customers are using Office 365, you are using Windows Azure AD. Windows Azure AD is the biggest Active Directory in the world by a factor of about 15, based on the largest known Active Directory that we have at a customer base, which is around about 40 or 50 gig in terms of the Active Directory file. The Windows Azure AD is. It's about 15 times bigger than that. It's got about 420,000 different domains in it. It's done 2 billion authentications. We're turning over an incredible amount there. So it's designed for scale. It's designed so you can hit it, get authenticated, come back on-prem, go out to other cloud providers. The Office 365 integration is there. And that's where we will cloud enable, if you will, identity, Active Directory, and get out there and enable you to do all this kind of stuff. Rights management came into Office 365 back in February. That rights management is sitting on, again, Windows Azure AD. So when you rights protect a document in Office 365, when you go and turn that on, when you do the automatic FCI, or whether you just use rights management in Office 365, that is using a service running on Windows Azure for rights management that's storing all of that information in Windows Azure AD. Okay, so there's a lot going on. So if you have any questions, please, oh, there's some over here. Excellent. Sorry, I can't see you in the light.
Really bright lights.
Is this on? Okay.
Yes, it is.
As far as the PowerShell goes, does it support, like, I have a dev QA and prod domains that have no trust between them. I author policies in dev. Can you use PowerShell to export those and import those into QA and prod without any problems?
So you want to create some group policy?
I create a group policy in dev.
Yep.
Assign it, test it out. I mean, it's doing server administration, not user-based stuff. I want to export that out, import it into QA and prod with PowerShell.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
I have a concern over doing that, but can you technically do it?
You can. So there are PowerShell commands that helps you to configure group policies. So what I would probably do is you can actually use some of those PowerShell scripts to create those group policy objects and basically export that as a script. Right? So you can actually then rerun those scripts into the QA or the production environment. So it is actually possible.
So it's better to create them than export and import.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, it's achieving the same goal in a different way.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Sorry? Domain name? Yeah, that's right. So,
yeah, one of my concerns, and the gentleman in the front just brought it up, is the domain name, is making sure that if your dev environment is a replica of your production, great, no problem, running it isolated, great. If it's actually a dev environment that runs in production, but they've just got no trust between them, then the details are going to be different.
Yeah.
So you just need to take that into account.
And it's really easy. It's really easy to change properties. So if you want to change a property or change the domain name across all objects, like if I want to change one property, like postal code. So if we moved offices and all 2,000 employees now have a new postal code, you can actually PowerShell is probably the easiest way to go about changing the postal code on all 2,000 employees. Right? It's just one command line instead of going 2,000 times. Right?
Christian, have you?
On the dynamic access control, I was confused. Which clients can support it? Can Windows 7 support it?
No. Dynamic access control is a Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8 for device claims. For down-level clients, there's a table that is on TechNet. Honestly, it's one of those tables that it's better to go look at it and look exactly what you've got.
So what is a down-level client? What's
anything
experience?
Below Windows 8, so Windows 7 and down. A down-level client, by definition, is anything except the current in-market latest version.
Oh no! But what happens on a Windows 7 machine when for a file or a folder that?
Oh,
has
I see. If you have one, right? It'll get blocked because the server can't authenticate the client.
Okay.
So it defaults to no unless it can prove yes. All right. Well, guys, I want to really say thank you to Raymond for doing those demos. Those are not easy demos to do, so thank you.
Especially after 26 hours.
Exactly. 26 hours on a plane.
Thank you.
We'll be around all week. We're also going to be spending time on the marketplace and the booth. We're also going to post all those details. So we'll put a blog out with all of the scripts, all of the details. And if you're interested, go to the lab. And you can also run this lab online as well. If you go to Microsoft.com, you can run this lab online at any point in time, so long as you're on internet connection through VM. So thank you.
Cool. If you guys got any more questions, sir.
Problem is that you don't get a certificate with it.
Yeah.
Does it get it now with it?
It does. So as long as the certificate is now in it has already been deployed, and you can actually include that certificate in there. So once the offline domain join is there, you can actually include it with the certificate so that it automatically authenticates with it.
On the beginning, you don't have the computer object.
Sorry.